It won't be long before winter winds begin to blow, and now is the time to get your home ready for winter. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today, and we're going to talk about what you need to think about before it gets cold. How to tighten up windows, what your insulation needs are. Are you losing heat through your roof? We'll talk about the challenges of weatherizing a historic home and more recent construction. We'll also talk about how landscaping around your home can influence your energy use and what you need to do to get your furnace in good shape. Also with us today is David Hade of Iowa Home Crafters. We'll talk with him about the latest advances in green building. We'll also be taking your calls at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Join us after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe, and we're talking about home improvement today with Bill McAnally. Hello, Bill.
Hey, Charity. How you doing today?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Good.
And you are with us today from the Building Analysis Auditor Training Conference at Kirkwood Community College in Cedar Rapids, right?
Yeah. What's even better is we're in the boardroom. We have the boardroom of the Kirkwood Center all to ourselves. So we're kind of a big deal over here.
Well, they knew you were coming, so they...
It was the only room left. I better be honest.
All right. Well, and Bill, you brought along a friend today. David Hade is one of the co-owners of Iowa Home Crafters, which is based in Ames. And hello, David.
Hello.
Hi. Thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure.
And you specialize in green building or sustainable building, and you are working on an assessment tool for evaluating homes for remodeling?
Yes, through the Center on Sustainable Communities in Des Moines, we're putting together a document that should help homeowners get a handle on their house and how things to do to improve it and to do them in the correct order.
Why do you think this is needed?
Well, a lot of times when we visit with people about projects that they want to do, it becomes apparent that there's some other things that they should be taking care of. Or maybe they should be doing them in a different order in order to get the best results. So this tool gives a builder an opportunity to go in and evaluate the whole house, look at everything in the home, and kind of come up with a scenario that makes sense so you aren't backtracking and doing things over, and you do things in the right order and do them in a conscientious way.
Can you give me an example of a situation where that may happen, where a homeowner comes to you or to another builder and says, I want this, and they really need to be focusing on something else first?
Well, probably the classic example is we have a homeowner call and say they want to put in a ground source heat pump heating and cooling system. We'll go out and look at the home, and it's obvious that they should be doing some things to tighten up the home, improve the building envelope so that the actual heating unit that they put in doesn't have to be as large as what it would need to take care of a home that's leaky or poorly insulated. That's a pretty simple example. And there's simpler ones where, adding windows to a home or replacing windows may affect other things in the home that, as far as tightening it up, it may affect how your furnace operates or how safely your furnace operates in terms of downdraft on the flue. So there's lots to think about when you take on home improvement projects.
Well, and I was taking a look at your website this morning and your focus on green building, and it seems like your focus is not so much on new technologies that might be green, but just basically more sustainable practices.
Yeah, so we like to take a responsible approach to building, where we're not just thinking about energy efficiency, which is important, but we also like to think about the materials that we use, where they come from, how far they have to travel. We want to make sure that we're building a home that's healthy to live in, that is something that people can stay in a long time. We like the home to have value to our customers.
When you talk about how far materials have to travel, what kinds of materials are you talking about specifically there?
Well, just about anything that we use in building, it's always good to know where it comes from and how it came to you. Even some materials that have to travel a long ways can be more sustainably brought to you. Certified framing materials that have been verified to have been sustainably harvested are preferable over ones that do not have a certification. We try to use as many Iowa products as we can. We try to use as many subcontractors and suppliers in the Ames area as we can, so that we support the local economy as well.
I noticed that you try to use Iowa wood when possible, and of course Iowa is not a state that's known for producing a whole lot of wood. Is there enough to support what you're doing?
Well, that's kind of a unique thing. We actually do have a sawmill, and when we have the opportunity to get our hands on a log, we'll mill it into boards, and we use it in special projects. Certainly we don't build a whole house out of Iowa wood, but if we can do some special thing for a client with some wood that we got locally, and we can tell them exactly where the tree grew and how old it was and why we got it, it might have a little more meaning to them in the project that it goes into.
Yeah. Real classy wood carver on staff.
Yeah, we do. We have a guy, Chad Yilf, who is an excellent wood carver. He does some fun stuff in special projects that we do. Yeah.
You know, a lot of people, when they think about green building or green remodeling, I think that there's this concern that, you know, yeah, that's something I'd like to do, but I can't possibly afford to do it. Is that the case at this point when you try to do these things more sustainably and use wood that is harvested more sustainably? Are you also increasing the price precipitously?
Well, certainly there's many things that we do that do affect the cost. Some things don't. Some things save money. It's to us, it's not entirely money driven. It's more the responsibility that we have as builders, and it's the right thing to do. We feel like many of the things that we do, even though they do possibly cost a little more, are what should be happening in the building industry. So we try to promote it from that angle rather than entirely on cost savings. There is a perception, though, particularly on waste material coming off a job site, that it's cheaper to throw away your material and haul it to a landfill than it is to recycle it. And we've just found that it's not true. We save quite a bit of money on disposal fees by recycling waste material and reducing our waste materials. That's a big one.
How much have you been able to reduce your waste?
Well, typically a builder will waste 15-20% of the materials that go into a project. We've gotten our waste down to less than 5%, usually running about 2%.
Oh, wow. So that has been a significant change.
Yes, yeah, and it's you know, once you're set up to do it, it's not difficult, and it's just a matter of getting your employees and subcontractors to understand what you want to do, and once you've got that done, it's pretty easy.
Well, David, thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
David Hayde is one of the co-owners of the Iowa Home Crafters, based in Ames, and Bill McAnally, our home improvement expert, is here with us as well. And Bill, what's the focus of the conference that you're at today?
Well, the focus that we're having this week is, it's put on by the Building Performance Institute, and that's a nationally standardized type of training that they give out. It's a nonprofit, but the training they give out is basically their motto is "Do no harm." And so what we're doing is we're spending time in the classroom. That's where Dave's trying to get more points. He's heading back right now to the classroom. We'll spend time in the classroom, and then in the afternoons we're going out and we're analyzing existing homes. Yesterday we were out looking at a three-bedroom home, did blower door tests, combustion tests, pressurization tests, and we're going to do the same thing this afternoon, and tomorrow is a testing day. The nice thing about this training is that this is one of the national trainings that that is really tied in with a lot of government programs. They want people that have gone through, say, BPI training. They'll be the ones that will be awarded the grants. And if you haven't gone through this training, well, then you may not be able to have access to some of the grants. So it's very, very well respected, and it's very intense. It really is. I've learned an awful lot this week, and it's being paid for by for us at least, a Central Iowa Power Company. It's a cooperative, electric cooperative here in Iowa, and then Center on Sustainable Communities. But the trainers are out of Wisconsin because we didn't have any BPI trainers in Iowa. So,
and what does BPI stand for?
Building Performance Institute, okay. And it's a really neat website to go to. They have a lot of different certifications, but we're really looking at the building analyst. We really want to see how, once you go into the house, you can make some recommendations to the homeowners. It was the house we were in yesterday, like probably built in the 50s, and it was very tight. I mean, it was a very, when people, think about it, it was a very tight home, and there's just very few recommendations to be made to this house. You're looking from the street, you would think, well, it's an older house. It's probably going to need a lot of upgrades. But some of the things when we're talking, that it's funny that, like a lot of these newer houses, we've got all this technology, we've got all these abilities, and a lot of these newer houses, we're just not doing as good a job, maybe as air sealing as how this older home even ended up.
Well, let's talk about that, because we want to talk about winterizing, and maybe
yeah.
You can put some of your new knowledge to to work for us here today, Bill. But when you're thinking about the winter coming, what are some of the things that you should be doing to assess your own home to figure out if you need to make some changes?
Well, what you really want to look at is, first of all, does my house feel like, say, moist? Do I feel breezes in the house? Are there certain rooms that are maybe cooler than other rooms? Or, when in the heating season, do I remember, hey, my back bedroom was really cold? Do I have a carbon monoxide detector? Now's a really good time with this weather, this interim weather, to get your heating and cooling person to come out and really inspect your equipment. And don't let them, if you have a gas furnace, just don't let them come in and look at the flame. They'll look at the combustion chamber. Oh, the flame's just the perfect blue. You can't tell, no matter how good you are. You can tell if there's particulate matter causing change in the flame color, maybe making it look real pretty and everything. But you have to use a carbon monoxide detector. You have to use a combustion gas detector to see if that equipment is working right. You just can't go into a room and look at the flame. And I know that people used to do that a lot. Oh, it looks great. Well, it may not. I hear the music.
Yeah, so the first clue is call somebody to look at your furnace. But we'll talk more about the other steps you should take in a moment. It's Home Improvement Day on Talk of Iowa. My guest is Bill McAnally, and we're talking now about winterizing your home. It's been a lovely fall so far, but it is going to get cold, and we're going to need to take some steps. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio, and we are talking about home improvement today. Bill McAnally, our home improvement expert, is here with us today. And right now we're talking about winterizing your home. What do you need to do before the cold winds start to blow? And Bill, your number one tip was call and get your furnace inspected. And Mary, who is on I-80 right now, has a question about that. She just had a furnace inspection. Hello, Mary.
Hello. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
We just had our furnace inspection, and using a little scope, they found two cracks in the back of the furnace. I think it's the heat exchanger, and are recommending a new furnace.
Right.
I had hoped to go to geothermal, but our house is from 1922, and our furnace person said that the ductwork is not the correct size to retrofit for geothermal. So he is recommending either just an increased efficiency furnace, because our is probably over 35 years old and the new ones would be about 95%, or an air-to-air exchange heat pump with a furnace. And
okay.
I didn't know your thoughts on which would be greener, more efficient, and would be happier with in the long term.
Well, the new air-to-air heat pumps are getting to be very efficient, even down to, say, some of them are down to 15 degrees before they have to have an electric resistance heat come on. So you're really going to have to do a I would ask him to do is really do a good cost analysis between the two systems. But the one thing about it, no matter if you put a geothermal or a 95% or that air-to-air heat pump system in, the ductwork that you have, there probably will have to be substantial, basically remodeling of that ductwork, no matter what unit you put in, because the ductwork, we found out that the ductwork is really important on how the air gets from room to room, but it can affect the efficiency of the furnace up to 50%. So, you know, you might get a 95% efficient furnace and then, well, it's maybe only working at 65% effectiveness, you know, getting the air to the rooms correctly. So you may have to redo all the ductwork anyway. So I would still throw the geothermal into the mix, and because that ductwork is to be sized and to be operating correctly, it's probably going to have to be changed to match whatever unit you put in anyway. We did find out, though, that, you know, if you go to say a real high efficiency furnace that has, you know, the modulating motors, variable speed motors on them, that sometimes you really don't save a whole lot of energy because they adjust their speed on how much air is able to come through that filter. And if your filter gets dirty, then they ramp up the speed, so you really don't save any energy because they kick on to high. So it kind of comes back to the personal maintenance as well, as you really have to stay up on the filters on all these units too. And that's a lot of times what drives the efficiency on them. But I would get a cost on all three because the ductwork is probably going to have to be redone.
All right, Mary, thank you so much for your call. And before we move on to point number two, after calling the furnace guy, Rick has been waiting on the line for quite some time. Rick from Iowa City. Hello, Rick.
Good morning. We live in a house, I think it was built in 1920, and we also got hit by the tornado, but anyway, what I'm doing, we have some insulation upstairs in the attic. It's not a very easy attic to get around in. And over the years, when they put in lights, there's four upstairs fixtures, and I've noticed that it's all just the wiring there, and it's not in conduit.
Right.
And I was thinking about putting in at least 3.5-inch bats or perhaps 6-inch bats of insulation just to make it warmer. And I was wondering if that would be a fire hazard or if I should just stay back like a... 6 inches or a foot from each light fixture while I'm doing it, or basically, would it be safe to put in fiberglass on top of the wires?
Well, the old knob and tube wires, you have to keep, by code, you have to keep the insulation away from it. We had a really big discussion on this yesterday, the old knob and tube, and so the recommendations now are that, and it's very labor-intensive, is that you use, like, say, drywall or half-inch foam, that comes in a board, and kind of make a box around the wiring so that you can put the insulation over the top of this. Really what you're doing is the only reason you're making this kind of a box is to keep the insulation off of the knob and tube wiring because, you know, when you go up in the attic, that knob and tube, they were always just kind of wired together and taped up out in the middle of nowhere so they can overheat and cause a fire hazard. And it's the same thing with the light fixtures. You don't want to put the insulation right up against those light fixtures. So if you make a box of, say, 5/8-inch drywall and keep it, you know, a few inches away on the sides and the top, and then put the insulation over the top, but you're not supposed to put insulation over the top, but, you know, it's kind of one of those things, well, if I don't, I'm losing energy. It's kind of a recommendation that you don't, but a lot of people do. But you don't really want to put that insulation right on top of that knob and tube wiring.
The wires just are strung across the top of the floor joist or the ceiling joist, whichever. So would it be okay to slip it under that if I could?
Is it the black knob and tube wiring, or is it Romex that's white? Is it single wire or two?
I believe it's single wire.
Oh, well, if it's single, then you can insulate around it. Yeah, if it's the newer Romex, the Romex is just a trade name. You know, it's about, 5/8-inch wider, a little bit thinner, and it has all three wires inside of it. It's all wrapped in an insulated covering. Yeah, then you're fine. But if it's the old knob and tube where the wire, you know, the black wiring that goes through the ceiling joists, goes through a little porcelain fitting, that's the ones that you cannot insulate over.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks
okay,
a lot
thanks.
For your call, Rick. And so now back to our list of,
yes,
of what
we
need to do to assess our house. So first you call the furnace people and get that checked out.
Yeah, that's a really big one. And then really what we need to do, what really affects the performance of the house on the windows, the doors, the basement, everything, is we have to seal the air leaks in the attic. You get this stack effect where the warm air, you know, tries to drive out through the attic, into the attic space, you know, through your ceilings in the winter. So we want to stop all that air leakage in there. And what sometimes happens, and we've seen this in the past as well, is we think, okay, let's just add some insulation up there without sealing any of the air coming through, say, wire holes or ductwork or something else letting air into the attic. What happens then is if you just insulate that attic, it cools the attic off because you don't have so much warm air going up, you know, leaking from the house. And then the roof sheeting gets cooler, and then the warm, moist air that comes through the insulation condenses, and then you actually have more frost on the inside of your roof than what you had before. And the majority of our leakage is caused there in that attic space. So what you want to do is crawl up in the attic, put on a really good mask, like an N85 mask, you know, that has the canisters on it, not just these little dust masks, and some goggles. Be very careful when you're up in the attic. Have a flashlight. Make sure you walk on the rafters or the ceiling joists. And pull the insulation back on top of the walls or wiring comes up. And then use a foam gun and seal all of those cracks. And what's a really good indicator especially is when you pull the insulation back, you know, like the pink fiberglass, if it's anything other than pink, and it's usually like a gray or a black, and it's because the dust that's been coming up all these years has been filtered out by the fiberglass, and so that's a really good indicator that you've got an air leak there. And once you go through that attic space and seal those leaks that are coming up through the ceiling, through the walls, through the wiring, it makes a tremendous difference. And what it can do, actually, is it changes the whole dynamics of the house as far as pressure, and a lot of times it cuts down the leakage that you'll notice, hey, you know what, my windows don't feel like they leak as bad as they used to because there's not so much air trying to come into the house to go out the roof.
Well, the kind of attic you're talking about is the kind of attic most of us have. How about for those of us who have a full attic?
Those are tough. I mean, they really are tough. You still have to, like, say if you have an attic and you use it for things, you know, you have wood up there and knee walls, you know, these little short walls on the sides, that kind of an attic. There's a lot of detail work that it's going to take somebody that really understands, a trained person that understands how to stop air in those situations because they really get tricky. That's a place where a lot of times they use, a dense packed cellulose, which is recycled newspaper, it's, you know, the gray fuzzy stuff. They'll put that in under pressure, and it helps stop the airflow and insulates at the same time. But you get into all kinds of dynamics up there with attic ventilation and moisture coming from the ceilings. That's why they have this type of training that we're going to is because it's taken a week just to go over incidences like that. You know, these little scenarios.
Yeah, you're not telling me anything I want to hear right now.
Yeah, so. I know. And see, you know, and it's like they always say, you know, the more you think you know, the less you really do know. And that's why it's nice to, you know, to get training from other parts of the country, other parts of, you know, different states, things that other people have seen. And that's why we see some of these building failures. It always seems like, well, let's just, and I'll do the same thing. Well, let's just tighten here. Well, how does that affect the rest of the house? And so sometimes you have to do a lot of thinking before you change the dynamics. But probably the easiest thing to do, though, is to do that attic work. And it isn't that hard. It's just time-consuming and dusty.
So once you've got the attic tackled, what's next?
Well, then you want to work your way down, you know, and that's kind of seems like in reverse, but you want to work your way down. And so then you can look around and, you know, check your windows and check your doors. Make sure all your weather strippings are in good shape on your doors. A lot of our, you know, newer doors have like a magnetic weather strip that goes around the jamb. So when you pull the door shut, that it seals against it. Look at that, because some doors are put in crooked. Believe it or not, they're put in crooked. They may, you know, hit at the bottom, and then they're not hitting at the top, and so the weather stripping isn't working, and you get a lot of air leakage around it. And really, a very good indicator is your hand. I mean, you can go out and get smoke guns and all these little things, you know, indicators, but if you're feeling something on your hand, then there's air moving. And the doors are a big one, and the worst one is probably the house to the garage. You really want to seal that, you know, for carbon monoxide issues. If you bring your car in, you know, you want to make sure there's no carbon monoxide coming from the garage. But it seems like that door isn't always as good as maybe the front and the back door as far as sealing. So you want to make sure that the weather stripping on the bottom of the doors is in good shape. You know, open the door, run your hand underneath it, or lay down on the floor and look at the little fins that are on the bottom of the door. And if they're in bad shape, they can be replaced. That threshold, you know, that you step across at the bottom of the door, they're usually adjustable. And when you look at that, you may see, like, say, four screws in that threshold. Those aren't to hold the threshold down to the floor. Those are to adjust the threshold to come up or take it back down, so that when you do close the door and the little fins on the bottom rub up against that threshold, that's what keeps the air from coming at the bottom of the door. So those two, if that it's adjusted. So when you shut the door, you do feel some pressure. You know, that door shouldn't just basically pull itself shut, or, you know, you can shut it with a couple fingers. There better be a little bit of pressure so that it's sealing on the weather strip at the bottom and it's sealing in the weather strip around the doors. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, so once we've worked on the doors, what do we need to be thinking about with our windows?
Well, our windows, you know, some of these, it is a case where how much can I save in energy if I replace my windows? They're a big ticket item. And, you know, most of the time, it isn't cost effective to replace windows unless you're going to be putting on siding at the same time. Some of these little kits that where you basically use kind of that shrink wrap on mm-hmm. the inside, if you don't have kids or pets, they work pretty decent. But still, the majority of that heat loss a lot of times is behind the trim work. It's not so much the glass and the window itself. It's when the window was put in, how, you know, there's always a space around that when they install it. What was that filled with? Did they just throw some fiberglass in there and jam it in, or is there nothing? In those cases, sometimes it might be worth pulling the trim off, and it's kind of a daunting task sometimes, but you can pull the trim off and then put some minimal expanding foam in that gap. That's just basically, it's not so much an insulator, it's stopping the air from going back and forth. And if you have replaced, say, these old double-hung windows that would go up and down on rope cables, you want to kind of put your hand on that trim when it's really cold and feel on the inside. If it is cold, then they probably didn't fill that, basically a 3-inch hole where the weight was, and they didn't fill that with foam or insulation.
And if you still have those windows, there's nothing you can do.
Not if you're still using still raising them with the ropes. No.
All right.
No, but you know, but that's always, those are usually a very good candidate to put a replacement window in.
Well,
we still have those.
We have a couple of callers waiting on the line. The number to call if you'd like to join our conversation is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send us email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Judy's on the line from Oxford. Hello, Judy.
Hi. Thank you. I wanted to ask about the optimal humidity for a house.
I
have a new building, and because the insulation is so good, I did not get air conditioning, but I was worried about the humidity, so I do have a dehumidifier.
Okay.
But I don't know what it should be.
You know, it's usually, for health, it's usually in that 40 to 50 percent range of relative humidity. But it also comes down to what you feel. Sometimes we relate too much to gauges and, okay, well, that number there, that's what I'm supposed to have. But if it feels too humid to you, you personally, then you may want to dry the house down. But anytime it's over 50%, you're getting at 55 to 60%, then you start getting into a range where if there's a lot of it and there's not enough air movement, you're looking at, some possible mold issues. If there's a lot of people in the house that if someone has a cold and then they cough, you know, when it's real moist, your sinuses are moist, and so it's easier for you to pick up, some viruses and some bacteria that way. But if you can get it in that 40 to 45, usually for most people, that's about perfect.
All right, Judy, thank you so much for your call. And we will be talking more about winterizing your home and taking more of your questions when we come back after a break. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We're talking about home improvement today with our guest, Bill McAnally. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and we're talking about home improvement today with Bill McAnally. We've been talking about winterizing your home and some of the steps you should take right now before it actually gets cold. And we're also taking your calls. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Stephanie is on the line from Manchester. Hello, Stephanie.
Hello.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
Well, my husband has a shop that is underneath our garage. So two of the walls are completely underground. The third wall is partially. And it gets rather humid in there because there obviously are no windows. He wants to insulate that for this winter.
Mm-hmm.
I think, won't the insulation get moldy? And shouldn't it be somewhat of a constant temperature because it is underground?
Well, it really will still have issues with condensation. So to insulate it, is it a cement, concrete?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What he should do is put 2 inches of extruded polystyrene foam against the walls. It's like the blue, the pink, the yellow type of foam, not the white.
He'll probably know what that is.
Well, oh yeah, like the Dow. You see it on a lot of buildings. Some of them is styrofoam. Is all it is. It's just like a blue styrofoam. That's just a name brand. But you use the extruded polystyrene you put it right up against the concrete wall and glue it. And then you can go ahead if he wants and then frame inside of that. He can put like 2x4 walls up inside and run his wiring and that. But if you put that, if you put the foam against the concrete, you're not going to have any moisture issues there as long as it's tight.
Okay.
And is there, you can see the bottom of the floor joists in that room too as well?
No, it's a concrete ceiling.
Oh, okay, so is there a garage up above that then?
Yes, mm-hmm.
Okay,
the garage is not heated.
Okay, what works really well in those cases then is to put the 2-inch foam on the ceiling as well, and you can attach that with special screws and washers.
Okay.
That'll make it a really nice working area for him, but he's going to have to, kind of be careful of, he wants to make sure that he has plenty of fresh air in that. I don't know what he's doing in that shop.
He's not doing anything in there now because it's moldy.
Oh, well, yeah, well, you want to get that mold. So if there is mold, wash it with soap and water first, get it really dried down. Don't use a lot of water, just enough to get the mold off. And get everything really nice and dry and then attach your foam to it.
Should he get some kind of a fan to?
Yes, he should have a fan in there anyway. You should have a fan that a quiet fan. They make a lot of different fans, but even it depends what he's working on, what kind of fumes he might have in there, like you may want to go to have him do some research on woodworking shops on the exact type of fan to have, but he should have an exhaust fan that pulls air out of that room and outside, especially if he's going to be using anything with solvents. And then you get into all kinds of issues of combustion, and you don't want any of that in there if he's got a open flame anywhere. So he's going to have to really look. There's some really good books on workshop safety.
Okay.
That he should look at. But the foam, don't let him put fiberglass up against that concrete.
Okay.
And because then you will have an issue.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call,
Stephanie.
Thank you.
Next up, we've got Lindley in West Liberty. Hello, Lindley.
Hello. Yes. I wanted to revisit the door draft issue.
Sure.
Okay. We live in a 100-year-old house, and we have pocket doors that go from the dining room to the living room.
Yep.
And unfortunately, it's just kind of a can of worms. I'm a little bit intimidated to even start with. I just am afraid we have asbestos siding, and these pocket doors lead to the outer wall.
Okay.
And you pass by, and it's not even a draft. It's like a cold
windstorm.
Yes.
Yep. Yep.
Do you have any suggestions that can take care of it temporarily? And if not, is it just that we have to go at this full force and spend a whole lot of money, or what's the deal?
Pocket doors are so neat.
Yeah, they are. Does this pocket door butt up against the outside wall?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Is there any way that you can, most of these old pocket doors, if you pull the trim off, you can pull the door out and then take it off the track.
Okay.
Okay, if you do that, then you'll be able to look all the way in the back of mm-hmm. the cavity where the door is, because there should be some space back in there anyway. They would usually have a door stop that
okay.
would stop the door so it didn't go all the way, you know, all the way back. Well, if you can, you can reach all the way back in there, and sometimes somebody can get their arm in there, surprisingly. Mm-hmm. But you can put an extension on some of these foam guns,
okay.
you know, like a small gun. You can, and I know you can do it because I've done it before, is you just put a long hose on it and kind of tie it to like a wood dowel or a stick. This is it's kind of a red-green duct tape thing going
okay.
on here.
Okay.
And then you reach all the way back and you foam all along that back where it butts up against the wall, and that's probably where all that air leakage is coming from.
Right.
Because go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just eventually, you know, there is no insulation in the outside wall at all.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just, and to pull off the asbestos siding, I mean, do we go off that from the outside, from the inside? That's what I mean about a can of worms.
Yeah, well, it all depends what the inside looks. Sometimes if you use a dense pack cellulose, if you have the real tall trim on the bottom, do you have really high base molding in the rooms?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Okay, you can pull that off and then drill holes into the cavities and then spray the cellulose into the walls.
Okay.
And it's a dense pack cellulose, so it comes in a smaller hose.
Okay. And even if it's not drywall,
you have the plaster.
Plaster walls, yeah.
Yeah, that works really good, but you have to make sure too that the installer follows it up with an infrared camera to make sure that he didn't miss any spots. But we've seen applications of they'll stick that into the bottom of the wall, they go all the way to the top, and I know it doesn't make sense that way, but they go all the way to the top, fill it all in, and it just fills the cavity completely full.
Okay.
So that's not so bad for you. You mess with the asbestos siding, you break them, and okay, now what do I do?
Yeah. Well, hopefully get all new siding once we win the lottery or something.
There you go.
Okay.
Well, good luck with that,
thank you.
Lindley. Thanks
okay,
a lot
thank
for
you.
Your call.
Hey, Charity.
Bye. Yes.
I was going to say, if other people have questions, especially on weatherization or anything, I'm starting to work with Iowa State Extension on like helplines and things. So if they call that 800-262-3804, that's the Iowa State Extension helpline, and then they just give me a buzz so I can always get contacted there if they have other questions off the air.
All right, and give us the number again, Bill.
800-262-3804.
All right, and we'll also put that on our Twitter feed and on our Facebook page if people
do
have questions.
Yeah, this is fun working with Extension. Working with, not for, but with.
Well, we won't get to talking about can of worms there, Bill.
Yeah, that's good.
All right. So we still have time for some questions right now as well. And Chuck is on the line at 866-780-9100 in Cedar Rapids. Hello, Chuck.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
Yeah, we've been looking into interior storm windows.
Okay.
And 'cause we have some old, not old, but our house is 30-some years old, and it's got casement windows all across the back. So I have like 10-foot window sections in my living room. And it gets quite cold in the winter, and we were looking at how to, possibly making or purchasing some retrofit interior storms.
Okay.
Have you ever looked into that?
Only a couple times. If they're put in correctly and they're sized, you know, usually custom sized to fit, they're okay. If they don't fit perfectly, what happens is if there's even a smallest amount of air leakage, the warm, moist air from inside the house will go between the storm and the other window, and that fogs up like nobody's business.
Okay.
You know, you all of a sudden you start seeing this iceberg, guys, just start climbing up the window on the inside, and then the sun comes out, melts it, and then you've got water running all over the floor. So you've really got to have somebody that really knows what they're doing on those. Those are kind of tricky. It's not like putting them on the outside.
And then, well, could you do that on the outside then?
There are some that they will put them on the outside, but then you can't open the window.
Right.
And especially if it's a bedroom, then it's illegal because you have to be able to open that window for fire egress.
Okay. And I have seen a not the shrink wrap plastic, but like a thicker Mylar type window. Are you familiar with that at all, or do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, surprisingly, they work fairly well. I mean,
and what is that material?
You know, I don't really know for sure either. I've just seen it applied. I've seen pictures, and I've seen some of them
for like three season porches and stuff, and they really work slick, and they have to be less expensive than glass, I would imagine.
You would hope so, but
yeah.
If it's something everybody wants, the price goes up.
right. So you haven't actually put any of these in?
No, I haven't put those in. I haven't had the occasion to do those.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Chuck.
Thanks, Chuck.
Thanks a lot.
Yep. Bye-bye. Have a good day. Jody is on the line from Cedar Rapids. Hello, Jody.
Hi.
What's your question?
I wanted to ask, how much does window glazing actually affect energy loss?
Window glazing?
Yes. This is, you know, the little bead of caulk that goes around the inside of the windows, correct?
Oh, that little, the white?
Yeah, it's not really caulk. I don't know
exactly what
it is. But
I know what you're saying now. Well, it does affect the leakage quite a bit. So if it's cracked and dried out, I would get it replaced.
Okay. I've got a rental unit, and the gal that lives there tells me that she thinks that, you know, that looks like it's pretty crumbly, and I just wanted to, before I sink money into that, obviously it's going to be a lot cheaper than replacing the windows, so.
Well, you know, the other thing is, too, is if you keep up on it, the window sashes themselves aren't going to rot out as fast either. That's for long term, it's a good investment to keep up on that, you know, and keep them painted so that those sashes in the bottom of the window don't rot out, because I've seen some where you could take a pencil and just stick it into the wood because, well, they thought, well, it's not leaking a whole lot. But it's well worth the time and investment. It's good upkeep, good maintenance.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for your call, Jody. And next up we have Jan in Atlantic. Hello, Jan.
Hi.
What's your question?
I have a gable home, 80 years old, gable roof home, which is a story and a half with a long attic sections on either side, you know, with a pointy roof.
Yep.
Just a simple structure.
Yep.
This spring I spent a fair amount of money, about $1,200, to have insulation sheeting or sheathing put underneath the roof on the slanted side that has holes in it. It's kind of a plasticky or Mylar or whatever. It's not fiberglass or foam.
Is it silver?
Yes.
Was this a good investment
or did I just get screwed?
Well, you know, it's one of those things where you don't say anything, you do.
Oh, dear. It doesn't really work, huh?
Well, it works really good in Phoenix.
Yeah, right.
But for radiant barrier to work, first of all, it has to always be clean, so it can't have any dust on it. It has to have air over it, so you can't bury it in anything. And in our climate. In fact, if I were you, I would look, I would just get on the internet, check on radiant barriers, and then go to the Department of Energy website on radiant barriers, and then you'll kind of have to tell for yourself, would I invest in it? No.
Well,
would any
they
of my
said
friends?
That
no.
The Department of Energy was giving a rebate for this material.
Oh, sure. But, you know, I might be thinking of something slightly different than
this
than
has little tiny pinprick holes in it.
But it's just
so
like a paper then. So it's kind of a paper.
No, it's not paper at all. It's some poly resin, poly, you know, plastic, cellulose, whatever, something shiny and crinkly.
Yeah. Well, me personally, I would not. I mean, I
wouldn't. You wouldn't do it.
No.
What they did was they put a solar fan on my attic, which does, I feel, work well. Then they punched in four holes on each side with attic ventilation.
Okay.
So I suppose that's going to be cold, letting in cold air this winter. But then I laid on R19 craft-based insulation all along the floor.
Okay,
and then
at least
also on the inside wall, I have styrofoam or something. I mean, I don't know what it is.
Okay, well, that stuff's good. Did the craft paper face down?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh no, no, the puffy is face down.
So the paper is facing up?
Yes. Should I turn it the other way?
Yeah. The paper should face down to the warm side.
Okay. All right.
But that's really good. That what you did right there is really good. Now, the solar fan, it just, you know, it depends on if they put it on a humidistat or if it just runs all the time.
It runs whenever the sun is out, and it runs well. It did help the summer with cooling. It really did.
Okay.
Because you get stuffy, kind of a stuffy smell on the second floor, or, you know, second floor story and a half, if you call it a second floor.
Yeah. Well, keep a look at it this winter, and there really should have been a lot of air sealing done first before you added any insulation, you know, kind of like what I was talking about a little bit earlier. But this winter now, what you want to do is look at the fan, and then if there's no snow or ice around the fan, then you've got an issue because you're just pulling warm air out of the house.
All right. Well, Jan, thank you so much for your call. And we have just a moment left. And Jeff sent us an email from Carbon Cliff. It says, I had a question about our attic floor. The attic floor is the plaster ceiling from below with 2x4s, and the insulation is only a couple of inches thick. I'm not sure what kind it is. It is brown color. My guess is it's rock wool.
Okay.
Is that something we should get rid of or just insulate over? And can insulation rolls go over the Romex and wire boxes on top of the attic floor joists?
It can go over the Romex and the boxes. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, leave that rock wall. That's good stuff. But just really be sure to wear a mask on that, because that gets stirred up and a lot of dust. Boy, that's scratchy, tough on your eyes. But that's a good insulation.
All right. Well, that's nice. You gave somebody an easy answer.
Yeah.
I think that's the only one today, Bill.
Well, way too much education this week. Huh?
The more you know, the less anything is easy, huh?
Yeah, that's right.
All right, so. Bill. Thank you so much.
Yep.
Bill McAnally is our home improvement expert. He joins us once a month to talk with us about home improvement issues. And also, I'll mention again the Iowa State University Extension number if you have questions about your weatherization is 1-800-262-3804. That's 800-262-3804. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Mitchell Schmidt. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org. You can send us email anytime if there's something you'd like to hear on the show or some feedback you'd like to send. The email address is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe, and tomorrow on Talk of Iowa, it's Horticulture Day. Linda Nave will be here along with Richard Giron, and Linda's going to talk about local food production. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.